Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this hour of Focus, we'll be getting at again, trying to get at again, a subject that we've talked about quite a bit, actually, with a number of guests over the last week or so. And I suppose it's something that we've really have talked about before as well. And that is pluralism. How it is we work towards that goal, that difficult goal, actually making that a reality. And I guess specifically here, in this program, we'll be talking about religious pluralism. And our guest for the program is Eboo Patel. One of our guests is Eboo Patel. He is founder of a Chicago-based thing called the Interfaith Youth Corps, which basically, he explains, is something that is designed to bring together young people from different religions to do volunteer work. He said he was inspired to create this by other service organizations like the Peace Corps, for example. And his idea is that when you bring people together to work on projects like that, it gives them an opportunity to start talking about their different faiths and about the connections between religion and social justice. He is here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois. He'll be speaking as part of the Friday Forum series today at the University Y. So if anybody is around Champaign-Urbana and they would like to hear him speak, it's free and open to the public, and anybody who would like to attend is certainly welcome. Just a little bit more about him, and I will also give him an opportunity, obviously, to introduce himself. But he was born in India. His parents brought him here when he was an infant, when he was little, and he did a lot of his growing up in the Chicago area. And he went to school, in fact, here, right? University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign.
That's right.
Also has doctorate in sociology of religion from Oxford, where he studied on a Rhodes Scholarship. Frequent contributor to the op-ed pages of the Tribune. He's also written for the Harvard Divinity School Bulletin, Utney Magazine, the Journal of Muslim Law and Culture. He's also written for National Public Radio. He's involved in a number of organizations, including the International Interfaith Center. He's on the board of Cross Currents Magazine and Duke University's Islamic Studies Center. He's an active member of the Council on Foreign Relations Religious Advisory Committee and the East-West Institute's Task Force on American Muslims. Also here in the studio, we have Nick Price and Hamang Srikrishan. And they are, one of them is a student here at the University of Illinois. One is a former student at the University of Illinois who were involved in the same kind of, in the project that we're here talking about, the same kind of project. And I'm glad to have them both here in the studio, too. So after a long introduction, I'll just give the telephone numbers and then we'll start to talk. Here in Champaign-Urbana, you want to be involved in the show, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Well, thanks for being here, all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I said a little bit about Eboo Patel, but I would like to have Nick Price and Hong Srikrishan, and I hope I'm doing okay with your name, to introduce yourselves a little bit and talk about how it is that you come into this project of working on interfaith dialogue among young people, college students particularly. One of you can start. Hamang, why don't you start?
Sure. So the whole interfaith idea basically has been in my life since birth, and that's because my parents are of different religions. My dad is a Hindu and my mom is Jain, and those are both Eastern religions, both originating in India. But the idea was that growing up as a child with both of these religious backgrounds, I saw a lot of different viewpoints, and seeing that dynamic made me want to learn more. But by learning more about each of these religions, I realized that I was able to do more for the community, for the greater good. And based off of that, when I came to the U of I, I attended an event called the Days of Interfaith Youth Service, which is an idea made by the Interfaith Youth Corps. And through that, I sort of got my first taste for what it really meant to be part of a bigger group of diverse, religiously diverse individuals that wanted to come together and build something. A lot of times we hear about people that are religiously diverse and they're destroying each other, you know? There's, I'm better than you, my God is better than yours, that sort of dialogue going on. But we don't have the dialogue of, well, I believe something different than you, but let's work together still. Let's come to an understanding where we can both grow, where we can both build community. So through that event, I learned more about the whole idea, and then I did an internship at the IFYC, the Interfaith Youth Corps. And from there, it's just been building and building.
Okay. And Nick, you are a graduate of the University of Illinois. You were a student. So you also became involved with the same thing when you were a student?
Yes, that's correct. I came to be involved in the Interfaith Youth Corps about 2 years ago. I became a Christian when I was a junior in high school, and I entered the university to study religious studies with our religious studies department. Mm-hmm. And as I grew in my faith and grew to understand what it means to follow Christ, I became very acquainted with Christ's teachings. And one of the ones that really stood out to me was, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." And when I came to the university, as I studied religions, I found that though we have very different theologies about who God is, what the divine other is, we have very similar sociologies in that there's a universal call to service of your fellow human being, universal calls to social justice, compassion, mercy, and that we need to be involved with one another on those areas of agreement. And one of the things that is very central to the Christian walk is this understanding of God's redemption of the whole world, not just individuals, but the whole of humanity, of the world that we live in, of the cultures that we're a part of in our societies. And that's really what the Interfaith Youth Corps is about, is learning how is it that we change the conversation. So many of these conversations, as Hemang alluded to, revolve around, this is my God and He's the true God, or this is what I believe at the exclusion of you. And we see young people killing each other all the time about these questions. But there's another aspect to faith. It's this united sociology of service. And how is it that we improve these common spaces? And so that's how I came to the Interfaith Youth Corps. Ibu came down as a guest in residence about 2 years ago at Allen Hall. And I went to hear him speak, and he was really resonating on these points with me. It was a deep desire in my heart to learn how is it that we build peace across religious lines. And I felt I was very genuinely living out my faith in accordance with Christ's teachings alongside people of other faiths in these areas of common interest and these common values. And so I went, and I also interned with Ibu at the IFYC, and since then have been involved on campus with Interfaith in Action as a student. Mm-hmm.
Well, now here, I wanted to now, well, we'll hear from Ibu Patel. But this kind of effort is something that you have been interested in for a long time, going even really back before the founding of the organization, the Interfaith Youth Corps. What was it that made you want to do this? And in fact, create a kind of organization where this kind of young people coming together, different faiths, talking about their values, trying to find common values, where that would happen.
It started here at the University of Illinois for me. I came to this university in 1993 from the western suburbs of Chicago, and from the first time I stepped foot in Allen Hall, I felt like the whole world was new. And the biggest new idea I was presented with at Allen Hall and at campus honors programs and at other unique spaces on this campus was the notion that the world that you have been handed is not the only world possible. There is another world possible, and you can build that other world. And the more that I reflected on that, the more that I realized that so many of my heroes across the 20th century who had tried to build a newer world, so to speak, were people of faith. They were people like Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, Desmond Tutu, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, His Highness the Aga Khan, Malcolm X, so on and so forth, Dorothy Day, Jane Addams. And what struck me in kind of looking at this group of people was not only were they all people of deep faith, but they were all people of different faiths. You had Gandhi the Hindu, you had King the Christian, you had Malcolm X and the Aga Khan as Muslims, you had the Jews like Abraham Joshua Heschel, Catholics like Dorothy Day. And not only were they all of different faiths, but many of them had built their remarkable movements with a deliberate interfaith character. So King and Heschel in the civil rights movement, or Gandhi and Bacha Khan in the movement to free India. I reflected even a little bit more deeply, and I discovered, my gosh, these people, when they began their work, were so young. And King was 26 years old in Montgomery, Alabama in 1955. Gandhi was even younger when he started his movement against racist pass laws in South Africa. And as I'm thinking about this, I'm watching my television in the mid-1990s, and every time I look up, I see a young person killing somebody else in the name of God. And Yitzhak Rabin, the Israeli prime minister, was murdered while I was a student here, murdered by a Jew in his mid-20s. I kept on thinking, why is it that every time I look up, I see religious kids killing each other. But when I look in my history books at my heroes, it is religious young people building a new world. And I guess what I decided was I wanted to find the faith heroes of my generation. I wanted to find the Christians and the Muslims and the Jews who are about building pluralism. And I feel like I'm sitting here with two of them, Nick Price and Hemangshi Krishnan. And I believe deep in my heart that there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of young people who are deep in their faith or deep in their identity or deep in their tradition, and they want to they hope that other people flourish also. They hope to build a world where all people can be free and safe and secure. And in my heart, that's the great question of the 21st century. Who's going to win, the pluralists or the totalitarians? The people who are committed to one way destroying all other ways, or the people who are committed to people from different backgrounds living together in peace and loyalty?
Mm-hmm. Well, talk about how it is that you've tried to provide a structure, maybe sort of formal or and also informal, just essentially to get people together to sit around a table like this and to talk about what it is important to them, what's important to them, what their faiths teach, and then to go from there to actually to agree on doing something together. And you know, how exactly does all this work?
Sure. So I think you're kind of asking the question about the Interfaith Youth Corps, so I'll just kind of say a little bit about that. So the Interfaith Youth Corps struck me as a concrete idea about 8.5 years ago, patterned to some extent off the Peace Corps, off of City Year, off of Teach for America, basically a new movement of young people who are engaging the great problem of this era. And the great problem of this era, I think, is religious extremism. And the big idea of the Interfaith Youth Corps is religious traditions might have very different theologies, might in fact lead to some different politics. But as Nick suggests, they share really important shared values. So show me a religion that doesn't care about compassion, a religion that doesn't care about mercy or doesn't care about stewardship, right? So why is it that when people from different faith backgrounds come together, they seem to too often only want to argue about differences in theology or differences in politics instead of saying, well, let's focus on these shared values, right? So what the Interfaith Youth Corps does is it puts that set of shared values kind of at the center table, and then it invites people to tell the stories from their faith that kind of speak to those shared values. How do you as a Hindu or you as a Jain or you as an evangelical or you as a Sunni Muslim care about compassion? And when you get that kind of storytelling going around how you connect part of your particular faith to the more universal shared value, the next question begins to beg itself, which is, what can we do together? So that's basically it. The Interfaith Youth Corps puts out in the world an idea that religious traditions can come together on their shared values. People can tell a rich set of stories on those values, and then they can enact those values in a set of concrete projects. And then what we frankly do is we trust the energy and the idealism and the brilliance of young people. And we say, with this set of tools, go build it. And we will help you coordinate a global program called the Days of Interfaith Youth Service, but you're responsible for making it happen on your campus, or you're responsible for making it happen in your community. And that's really where the kind of where people like Hemang and Nick are so important, because the Interfaith Youth Corps doesn't exist unless they say, hey, that's exactly what I'm about, and I'm going to implement that in creative and interesting ways back home where I'm at. Yeah.
How many people, roughly speaking, have been involved in Interfaith Youth Corps during the time that it has existed?
In the past 8.5 years, we have probably had somewhere between 40 and 50,000 people kind of involved in our programs, meaning involved in some sort of an Interfaith Youth Corps educational program or an Interfaith Youth Corps service project. And again, we as an organization based in Chicago don't organize every step of this ourselves. What we do is we identify and train people like Nick and Hemang to go organize it themselves. So, you know, there are a group of people in Nigeria who organize interfaith youth programs, a group of people in Jordan, a group of people in the Balkans who organize interfaith youth programs along the model of the Interfaith Youth Corps. And that's what's really possible in the internet age. But maybe Nick and Hemang can talk a little bit about how they organized the Days of Interfaith Youth Service here at the University of Illinois, and how they built it to be the largest campus-based Days of Interfaith Youth Service currently in the country.
Sure. Well, go ahead and do that.
Well, one of the things that we have at the University of Illinois that most people don't realize is a rich legacy of student religious involvement on campus. The Muslim Students Association here is the first one in the nation. The Hillel Jewish Campus Life is the first one in the nation. We have the first Christian foundation churches in the nation. We're all here. And so as we came into this, we realized that we are in a sacred place, even though this is a public university. And so our goal was, how do we take these different groups that are on campus that are doing amazing work individually, and how do we engage them together? And the way we did that was basically by taking advantage of the amazing network of registered student organizations that are here on campus and saying, who are the leaders for the Hindu Students Council, for the Muslim Students Association, for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship? How do we engage them and encourage them to come? And we started doing that when we had guests like Ibu on campus talking about the importance of interfaith work, but also through smaller dialogues. But the other thing that we really had to do was think about how do we engage the campus as a whole? And we have amazing organizations like the Religious Workers Association, which want to support students in this push for interfaith cooperation and interfaith dialogue. And so we really just started to identify these different groups and get them talking together. It was really about networking with one another and sharing about this value and really affirming the pride that these different groups have in being the pioneers for religious work on public campuses and encouraging them to take it a step further in this kind of plural environment that we have and engage with one another. So that was our focus and our goal. And it started initially as we looked at our campus, we saw a lot of division, especially around political issues like the Middle East, like Israel-Palestine. And Interfaith in Action grew out of a group called Bridges. Bridges was a group of Jewish students and a group of Palestinian students that wanted to come together and talk about the issues going on in the Middle East. And so they came together to talk about these issues, but sadly they only knew how to talk about these issues in one way. Your people are killing my people. And that's why we said, you know, we need to change the conversation. We need to have a new kind of dialogue. We need to create a base in which we recognize and affirm the beauty of each other's traditions and how they can complement one another to make achieve a higher goal of service towards one another. And that's when, you know, Ibu and the IFYC kind of came on the scene, as they said that there are shared values here. Let's start with those. And once we start with those, we realized it's not just about Jewish students and Palestinian students. It's also about Christian students. It's about Hindu students. It's about Jain students. And we broadened what we were looking at. And so taking these values, taking the rich religious traditions on this campus and the work that's being done and bringing them all together under this heading of, we have a common goal of peace and cooperation. Let's do it together. And so that's kind of how we started to move in that direction. And so we've done 3 days of interfaith youth service on this campus, and we're looking forward to the fourth coming up this spring. And we're hoping to have an even bigger turnout than we did before. We had about 100 students last year. We had a student last night at one of our events say, why not shoot for 1,000? So that's kind of our goal, and we're going to go for it.
Yeah. Well, you want to add something onto that?
I think Nick really summed it up pretty well, but as he was saying, someone was talking about having 1,000 people at this event, and we really do want to shoot for that because there's no reason that it shouldn't happen. There are, I think, all of us are seeing that there really is a push to do this, and a lot of people are genuinely interested in this. It's not just something that is, I guess, it's something that is really appealing to people in their core. It's actually something that they really believe about, and to come together with other people is something that's fulfilling their own lives. And for that reason, I think that a lot of people will start getting involved in this movement, and that, as Nick was saying yesterday night at this event, that the U of I is sort of the ground, the base for this movement. And it's on one cold night in February, we all came together to start this movement together. And now it's going to start really taking off, basically.
Yeah. Let me try to reintroduce everybody here. And we have a caller we will get to. The last person you heard, Hemang Srikrishnan, is a student here at the University of Illinois. You're a Hindu? Or you both? You think of yourself as being both Hindu and Jain, both?
Right.
Because you had one parent who was each?
Right. My dad is Hindu and my mom is Jain, so I've grown up with both teachings, and I really do believe that I follow both as well.
All right. And Nick Bryce, he's Christian. Eboo Patel, he is a Muslim. He is the founder and executive director of the Interfaith Youth Corps, which is based in Chicago, and has inspired students at college campuses all over the country, and in fact, not I think just even in the United States, to organize in this kind of way, to get people from different faith traditions together to talk about what it is they have in common, have some kind of common activities, try and get a better understanding. He is here. Eboo Patel is here to speak as part of the Friday Forum about this very thing, about the idea of promoting religious diversity on college campuses. And that's happening at the University of Y on Wright Street at noon. And these programs are always open to the public. Anybody who was interested in attending certainly should feel welcome. Also, sometime soon, Beacon Press will be publishing a book by Eboo Patel. It's a memoir or a personal book about you and your experiences and who you are and how you came to this place. Acts of Faith, the title. When will the book be out?
God willing, in the summer.
All right. Very good. Well, again, questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Somebody in Bloomington, Indiana is calling here, our first caller on the toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hi. I certainly applaud your tolerant attitude. Let me ask your guests to comment on some realities. In India, there is a group of a low caste called the Dalits. We often think of them as the untouchables in the Hindu faith. And They have been approached by Christians. They can become Christians, but except that the Indian government won't allow them to become Christians. Oftentimes, if they become Christians, they are fired from their jobs. They're not allowed by the police. The police round them up and will not allow them to attend Christian meetings. If they become Christians, they are deprived of government benefits, and it that is to say, if they try to escape their untouchable status. Now, they're in this untouchable status. They're the lowest caste, and they got to stay there. And if they try to escape that lowest caste, they are discriminated against. Also, any romantic liaison between untouchables and someone from a higher caste means death. Both people involved are killed. Now, we all know how Muslims treat infidels. Or how they treat fellow Muslims of different sects. Is that enough to comment on?
Well, we'll give the guests a chance. Obviously, here the great challenge is that I was actually talking about this just the other day with Martin Marty. The great challenge is that we all know that evil has been done in the name of God, not just by Hindus or Muslims, also by Christians, perhaps also by Buddhists. I'm not sure. I'm not sure anybody gets a pass here. So for any faith or for any person of any faith, here is a great challenge. No one's record is spotless. So how do you think about that?
To some extent, I think about this in a very human way, which is if I meet somebody of another faith, I promise you, I have tapes full of horrible things that their faith has committed in the world. But I also have tapes full of wonderful things that their faith tradition and their faith heroes have contributed to the world. Why would I start the conversation by pointing out the evil that some people who happen to call themselves by the same religion have done? It seems to me that that's... we all know in some common sense part of who we are that that's absolutely counterproductive. If I were to walk up to somebody and say, hey, I know somebody who looks just like you, they were the most horrible person alive. Or I know somebody who grew up in the same town that you grew up in, and I couldn't stand that person. It immediately creates a situation of animosity, which is one of the reasons I think that what our greatest challenge today is to highlight possibility and move towards that. Nick Price is an evangelical Christian. Hemang is somebody who follows the Hindu and Jain tradition that is not, in many consider, monotheistic. I am a Muslim. I have deep theological differences with both of the people to my left and right. But why would I start the conversation by saying, I think you're wrong about X, or I wish your people wouldn't do this to my people? Why wouldn't I say, you know, Nick, I think one of the most important things that happened in America in the 20th century is that a young Christian grew up in Atlanta, decided that his Christianity meant leading a people and a nation to freedom. And I want to know how that inspires you.
Don't, though, I guess I continued to wonder, though, that whether sooner or later you do have to get around to the problem of deep theological differences that separate people. And I think that, you know, one of the challenges is that I don't know if all faiths do this, but many faiths, they have a claim of exclusivity. They say we may have things in common with other faiths. There are certain things that we can agree on. But at the end of the day, there's only one God, ours, and there's only one way really to get with that God, and that's our way. And how do we ultimately get around that point that it seems to me sooner or later you've got to get to?
I think that that's a very valid question, and one that you know, I personally wrestle with, you know, as an evangelical Christian, because I very much want to affirm the interfaith movement, but at the same time, I can't deny my own beliefs that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. But I think there, in and of itself, is the answer. By starting with this understanding of shared values and shared service together, we're building a common respect and understanding for one another in which we can begin to address differences, but address them to people that we now know, that we now look at as friends, that we now look at as neighbors. The problem is that too often we look at the label and we associate many terrible things with the label, and we don't stop to say, how is this person living out their faith and what do I have in common with them? And secondly, this notion of, from my tradition, you know, Jesus being the way, the truth, and the life, he also says that seek the truth and the truth will set you free. And so while we might have different theologies, I think we're all searching for truth, and we can at least affirm that journey together. And now that we've built this common level of understanding and cooperation, we can begin to embark on those harder questions together and still keep that atmosphere of respect, of cooperation. The problem is that many people say that because we're searching for truth, we can't work together. I do not believe that. I believe that we search for truth by working together, that they can be done simultaneously in harmony, in a kind of beautiful dynamism together. And I think that that's the call that we have to bring to people and say that, yes, we do have different theologies and admit that from the get-go. But also say that as we discuss those, let's also talk about areas of cooperation and let's start from there. This is only the base. This isn't the end. It's the means. It's the means to getting into these deeper conversations. And so I think that any of us would be guilty of not taking this seriously if we didn't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, we have another caller. We have a couple of other callers. So why don't we bring them in? We'll go next to somebody who is calling on a cell phone. This is our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hi. I would like to applaud all the young folks who have done a great job. And they're tolerant to each other's religion, and I think it's very important. But I have a specific question. When we look at all these terrorist activities and extremism around the world, it comes from a particular religion. Is there a reason why this happens only in this religion? Is it related to the socioeconomical conditions or the culture? Would the guest be able to comment on these issues?
Well, can you comment on it?
Right. I appreciate – I think that's a good question. It's the why does Islam have bloody borders question. I think that the first thing I want to point out is that as a Muslim, I consider the taking of life in the name of Islam an absolutely heinous crime. The Quran, the Holy Quran, says that to take one life is to kill one person is to like kill all people. And I consider that absolute anathema to me, and it hurts me in two ways. It hurts me because life has been taken, and it hurts me because it has been done using the holy language of my faith. I think that it's also important to point out that it's not just Muslims who are engaged in this, and it's we have, for a long time in Northern Ireland, the Irish Republic Army committed horrible acts in the name of Catholicism. But nobody walked around America and tapped Catholics on the shoulders and said, hey, you're responsible for those crimes that the IRA is committing in the name of your faith. I promise you, you're going to find totalitarians and extremists in all faith backgrounds.
My point was, I think it's more of socioeconomic conditions that would trigger all these problems. If we can focus on improving these conditions, I think everything will settle out. I think there won't be much crimes in the name of religion.
Right. Well, I hope for a world where everybody eats three square meals, where everybody sleeps in a safe place, where everybody has a decent education. But I think that we also have to just be aware that a lot of the religious totalitarians in the world, from Pat Robertson to Osama bin Laden, they did not grow up poor. And while there is no doubt in my mind that addressing socioeconomic challenges would help us go a long way to reducing religious violence in the world, there are also a set of other challenges that have to be dealt with that I think are more cultural in nature. The interesting thing also, as Nick is pointing out to me right now, is that it's our religious traditions, at least for me and I think for my colleagues here around the table, that call us to be engaged in the curing of disease, in the stewardship of the environment, in the easing of poverty. And so in a way, one finds within one's own tradition the sucker to do exactly the kind of work that you're suggesting.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's talk with someone else. This is someone here in Urbana, where we are, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, in your group, I guess I didn't hear the introduction, so I'm not sure exactly what your group is, but I was wondering if you have any people who are not people of faith involved, and if since we are in a predominantly Christian area, if there are far more Christians involved, or if it's more spread out over the various faiths, and I will listen offline.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Okay.
So, yeah. So what kind of makeup do you have in your effort here in Champaign-Urbana and on the U of I campus?
So, what we realized as we've done this more and more is that people of a lot of different religious backgrounds come. Last year, I believe there was a member of every sort of what's termed the great world religions, but yeah, people of at least 8 different backgrounds came to our event, and there's never sort of a dominance of Christian believers, even though I don't see how that would harm us in any way, but yeah, we see a lot of diversity and a lot of good contribution from every single aspect and every person from different faith backgrounds.
And are there atheists involved in this effort?
We've had a few, yes. It's not, of course, since it's based on faith, it's not as well attended by atheists or people that might be agnostic or something like that. But we do have a few, and sort of our view now is trying to bring people that are and that have those beliefs into our conversation as well, because we believe in sort of a pluralistic society, not just religious, but in every way, so that people that don't have a belief that's founded on a religion can still bring something to the table, something that's really useful for us, and we can still build community with those people as well.
Well, and again, just to make sure people understand the concept, in addition to just trying to get people together in a sense to get to know one another and for them to talk about each other's faiths and to talk about what's important, what other kinds of things do you do?
Well, when we start talking about faiths, when we start talking about ourselves, rather, we can convey through our stories. That's our major method of giving our message out, or really showing what we live out in our lives. And through those stories, we can sort of reveal ourselves, and through that reveal what we take from our religion, what's really inspired us in our religion.
The other thing that we like to do is we like to have common experiences, not just these shared values, but looking at how these shared values are played out in our everyday lives. And one of the great ways that we love to do that is through service projects and the days of interfaith youth service. And what this provides is not only do we see and talk about a shared value in some sort of abstract, but we actually start to apply it in our lives together. And there's something about that shared common experience that I think further encourages deeper dialogue, deeper relationships around these issues of religious diversity. And to go also back to the question about, you know, people who don't consider themselves religious in any way, whether they're agnostic or atheist, we find that most of the people who come at least recognize that there are a lot of people in the world who do have religious faith, and they want to know, how do I understand these people? How do I work with them? And what can I share with them so that they can understand me? So it's really this idea of understanding and recognizing that we do have different identities, and how do we work together across those lines? So we do encourage them to join us, to be a part of this movement, because we want to hear about what forms their identities and how does that motivate them to also do service and to be active in the world around them.
I think the caller is also asking a broader question about the nature of America's religiosity. And we really are a remarkable society in that sense. America is the most religiously devout society in the West, meaning we have much higher numbers of people who say they believe in God. We have much higher numbers for church and mosque and synagogue attendance than any other country that's kind of like us, in Canada or Western Europe, for example. We are also the most religiously diverse country in the world. Let me just provide you kind of an insight into that. Jefferson and Franklin, when they went to church, would often go to Episcopal churches. Madison was buried in an Episcopal service. Many of our founding fathers were somehow associated with the Episcopal Church. Well, today in America, there are about 2.2 million Episcopalians. There are 3 to 4 million Buddhists in America. There are around 3 million Presbyterians. There are 6 million Muslims in America. So we're looking at a very new religious country, undoubtedly predominantly Christian by a long shot. But if you were to look around the religious demographics of a place like the University of Illinois, you're going to see student groups that are representing the Jain faith, the Hindu faith, the Baha'i faith. They're going to be Buddhists. They're going to be Muslims. These are all very active student groups. And so the presence of dozens or hundreds or in some cases thousands of these students does in fact change the religious landscape of our country. And I think America has the opportunity to say we're going to build a model pluralistic society, which is to say we're going to build a society that models how different religious communities come together to serve the common good. Because if we don't build a model somewhere in the world, then we're going to watch civil and interreligious wars tear this planet apart.
Just one further point, though, and I have some other callers I want to get to. I guess the impression I get is that for some time now, there have been – obviously, there are students at a place like University of Illinois who have religious faith, who do continue to practice it, and who get together with other people of the same faith. But it sounds as if for a long time, and maybe even now, these people, they're kind of keeping their heads down. They're not really active in a high-profile way, or at least for a long time that they weren't, and that they weren't talking to one another all that much, and that what you're trying to do is, in fact, at least promote more dialogue across religious faith, and then perhaps also, you know, encouraging those people to be more active and be more open in talking about what it is that they think is important.
You know, I think that's exactly right, and that's actually the topic of my Friday Forum talk at the University YMCA, which is really about how college campuses can better engage their religious diversity. The truth is that the campus as an institution in America, kind of higher education as a sector, is highly secular as an institution. But large swaths of their student bodies are very, very religious. So I bet you the largest student organization on this campus is the one that Nick Price works for, which is InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. I bet you that's the case. The largest student organization on the vast majority of campuses in America is a religious student organization. I also bet you that the most interesting and flourishing type of diversity on campuses in the past 25 years or so has been religious diversity, largely for demographic reasons, is that you have the children of the 1965 era of immigrants who came largely from Asia and brought their Jain and Buddhist and Hindu and Muslim faiths with them. Those children are now going to college, and they're starting student groups. And so those student groups are proliferating and growing on college campuses. And the institution of the campus has very little in the way of how to engage those groups. So why campuses have done, I think, a reasonably good job in at least being proactive about engaging other types of diversity, racial diversity, ethnic diversity, gender, class, sexual orientation. And I think we live in a much more tolerant society as a result of the campus doing that. The campus has largely ignored religious diversity. And I think part of what the Interfaith Youth Core is saying is the American campus has a great opportunity to help us build a religiously pluralist society by modeling it at their institution. Mm-hmm.
We have just about 10 minutes left, and I have some other callers. I want to try to get a few more people in here. And also, I want to introduce again the guest for anyone who has just tuned in. Our guest here, the last person you heard speak is Dr. Ibu Patel. He is the founder, executive director of the Interfaith Youth Corps. It's based in Chicago, and it is an organization which, as he explained, was modeled on other kinds of organizations like the Peace Corps, for example. And his idea was to bring together young people from different religions to do volunteer projects and also to talk about their faiths and to share their experiences and to talk about what for each of them is important and to see if they can find common ground in that process. And also in the studio is Nick Price, who is on the staff of the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, former U of I student, and also Hemang Srikrishnan. And he – now, do I have it right that you're also with IVCF? The InterVarsity Christian?
No.
Okay. Sometimes I get confused. I get too many guests and too much information. Hemang is a student now at the University of Illinois. Maybe I also, again, should mention for the sake of, you know, acknowledging our diversity, that Ibu is Muslim, Nick is Christian, and Hemang is Hindu and Jain. Mm-hmm. And you're in, and both of them, the two guys, the two young guys here from U of I, have both been involved in this kind of project that also Ibu Patel is in interested in getting going, interfaith dialogue, interfaith activity. And tell me again, Hemang, I mean, how else would you like to be identified, other than what I said? Are you formally involved with?
Right now, I'm the co-chair of the Interfaith in Action Club.
Okay,
I work with the Hindu Students Council and the Jain Students Association.
So I get I got you and Nick confused. I got your identification there crossed up. Okay, it's Friday. We do have some other callers here, and I'd like to get some more involved. So let's do that, and we'll talk with someone. I think in Urbana, line number one. Hello, is a caller there in Urbana, line one?
I'm in Champaign.
Sorry. Yes, you know, you're absolutely right here. I'm looking at my screen here, and indeed, you are in Champaign in line one. Well, please go ahead.
I just wanted to add a comment to the whole idea of getting together and discovering how you're alike. I think the big thing that everybody misses is that even doing that, there's still this concentration on theology. How is our theology the same? How does our dogma differ? And people can't get past that. I think we need to step even beyond that, and we have to say it isn't about answers. It's about the journey. That if you look at everyone's search for whatever it is they're looking for that we really share in common, it's the journey. And there are many different paths and many different ways to do it. But I have come to the conclusion that there is no, I'm never going to find that day when I say, aha, I have all the answers. It's not the answers that matter. It's the journey. And if we all understand that and look at each other as human beings and remove the whole idea about theology and dogma, I think you'll go a long way to easing differences. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
I appreciate the comment. I would imagine the guests would agree.
I think that's beautiful. Yeah.
I think that, I do come from an evangelical Christian background, and so I would hesitate to say that theology isn't important, because according to my tradition, being in relationship with human beings is vitally important, but so is being in relationship with God, and I can't ignore those questions. I can't ignore that dialogue. But what I can say is that my theology does teach me that we're all created in the image of God, And so I can affirm the journey and the desire to embark on that journey together. And that's very important. It will lead to questions about what is truth and how do we understand truth. But because I recognize that we're on that journey together and we have this common idea, identity in being created in the image of God, it allows those conversations to take place at a higher level. So I don't know if I would go quite as far as our caller, but I do understand the idea that she is presenting about we are on this journey together, we live together, and how do we embark upon it side by side as opposed to in conflict with one another.
You want to add anything?
I only want to say that that so often the only image of the evangelical Christian in America is Pat Robertson, somebody who wishes fire and brimstone on anybody who is a millimeter away from how he thinks about the world. And let it be known that there is a generation of committed evangelicals who are thoughtful pluralists, who are engaged citizens, and I think that it's being led by young people like Nick Price.
Okay, well, let's talk with someone now. I think we have someone in Urbana. This would be line number two. Hello. Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm really grateful for this program. I have two questions. One, what about the disabled? I would love to hear the talk at the Y today, but being disabled, I really can't. Anyhow, and also, what about, I think it's very helpful to have somebody who cares, who phones, whose word is does the same inside as they are outside. And that with that comment, I will hang up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know exactly how we address that other than to, I suppose there are matters of accessibility, I guess. How do you, is there a way that you have of reaching out further than the kind of conversations that we're having or the kind of things that you do where you can actually bring people together physically around the table? I mean, is there a way to do that when people cannot actually get together face to face?
I think that Interfaith and Action on this campus has very much tried to take that into consideration. And so a big part of our days of interfaith youth service here, and I would think around the country at a variety of other campuses, is reaching out to people of all backgrounds. And so we have been very privileged to partner with groups like the Swan Center, the Care Center of Urbana, people who are physically disabled, who have learning disabilities, and going to them. A big part of, for me, what it means to be a Christian is being, you know, Christ's hands and feet in the world, going out to people, not expecting them to come to us. And that's a value that I think the IFYC shares, that Interfaith and Action shares, of we need to get out there. They're not going to come to us. This mentality of build it and they will come does not work. And so I really appreciate the caller's emphasis on that, that we need to get out and really engage with people. So I just want to say thank you for that wonderful comment.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll try and get one more call in Charleston. That would be line number four right here. Hello.
Yes. Two questions. How does yours, the Muslim, Christian, Hindu, the whole of religion, deal with the silence of God? Suppose I don't believe in God. The silence of this supposed God and the relationship between religion and money. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
All right. Well, can you any or all of you want to take on that question?
I think that's a very profound question, and I'll try to answer both of them as briefly as possible, and then turn it over to
and actually, I can probably give you about a minute. Okay. I'm sorry to have to do that.
The first question on the silence of God, I think Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel was brilliant on this. He said that it was not God who was silent during the Holocaust. It was man who was silent, and it was God looking for what his servants, what Nick understands as being the hands and feet of Christ, were doing. And I believe that. I believe that God created humankind to be his abd and halifa on earth, his servant and representative, and it is our job to move creation in line with the intention of the Creator. On money, different traditions look at this differently. The Muslim tradition looks at money and material matters as something to hold in moderation. The Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, was a merchant in Mecca. He was a successful merchant. He was somebody who kind of is the archetype of somebody who kept, for Muslims, who kept a balanced life. And money and having a household is part of a balanced life.
We're going to have to stop because we're here at the end of the time. What I do want to say, though, well, first of all, for people who are in and around Champaign-Urbana, if you would like to hear more from our guest, Eboo Patel, founder, executive director of the Interfaith Youth Corps, he'll be speaking at the Friday Forum at the University of Y today, a little afternoon. And these are all free and open to the public, so anybody who is interested can stop by and attend. If you'd like to find more about the Interfaith Youth Corps and you have internet access, they do have a website, which is www.ifyc.org. And if you're also interested in more about this activity, coming this summer, a book by our guest Eboo Patel, Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. That's the subtitle. And it's coming out from the Beacon Press, so that would be another opportunity. Also, I wanted to say thanks to our guest Nick Bryce, who is now on the staff of the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship here on the U of I campus, and Hemang Srikrishnan, who currently chairs Interfaith in Action on the U of I campus. Thanks to both of you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And also thanks to the people who called.
Thank you.